Should we make like a new audio face award for shortest breath control or what?
Hello, humans, hey. And welcome to Audio Face. This is episode 44, and I am Dan.
I'm Sean.
And this is going to be sort of a quick episode for you. Just kind of coming in really fast. We got a really busy week, personally, in our busy lives. But, you know, there's some really big things in music that happened this week and last week that we need to really get through. Sean, how are you doing?
I'm all right. Kind of dying or training, but hanging in there. What about you?
It's my last month at Berkeley, and you'd think it'd be, oh, it's relaxing and I'm reminiscing, but, Berkeley's got one last fucking in ready for me.
Alright. One last jab in the jugular.
Yeah, it's got a couple midterms here, paper there, it's really gotta lube up this last semester, this last month.
Yeah, it's rough in the streets.
Anyways, this is a podcast about music news and music culture, and Sean, are you gonna be moving your scroll wheel the whole podcast?
Yes. My entire podcast. I realized how loud that was, and I'm like, I'm just gonna click or use my arrow keys. This is really obnoxiously loud. I'm using a different mouse today, too, so... I'm keeping it away from the mic, but...
You can't be switching up the hardware on us.
Well, you gotta keep you on your toes somehow.
Jesus, y'all, you're not the one editing the podcast.
That's true. But so there's a new single from Fake Jamaican Drake, and we don't give a shit.
Yeah, it's very obvious that even though this is gonna be his year of taking a break, allegedly, that he's got some like project coming out. So we're not gonna entertain this whole like covering every single thing Drake does until we hear an LP or a mixtape or whatever the fuck he's talking about. Although, we will take this time to talk about Drake and talk about the fact that his Pick Six restaurant club thing is closing down. yet another in failed artist, failed artist ventures, if you will. I think Ice Cube's like special basketball league is having some issues too. Arabs owe him money, apparently. Not going to get into that.
I forgot about that.
Don't want to offend our Qataran sponsors. But anyways, not our one Qataran listener. But anyways, the doors to Drake's new Toronto restaurant, they opened in February, according to Consequence of Sound. It was supposed to be like a nightclub lounge with a family and couples friendly vibe restaurant and sports bar. So it's like everything. It's kind of a hodgepodge restaurant. So of course it was going to fail. And apparently, a critic said that the restaurant started at the bottom and it stays there, which is as rough as Zagat can be, I guess.
That's pretty bad. That's really rough.
Ketchup apparently cost $2 to get there.
Ketchup cost $2. How extra are you?
Gotta get them $2, Drake.
Gotta get them $2. I'm an asshole.
Oh my god. Well, next, I was also to point out that I'm aware that Lil Xan is an artist, and he exists, and that he released something resembling an album, but we won't be talking about that because this is a music podcast, and
we're not going to acknowledge his existence even, so, for all intents and purposes, you don't exist on this planet Earth.
Wow, Sean, that's the line.
That's fine. I'm toeing that line. I'm trying to tread on that and see how far before I step over and fall through quicksand.
You absolutely nailed it. Good job. Okay, let's talk about some music that we actually did enjoy, or at least I actually enjoyed. They, which was one of the cooler artists of last year that I discovered, discovered thanks to the help of Tammy, who has been in some episodes of Audio Face that you should check out. The episodes forgive me right now, but you can scroll and figure it out. But they blend kind of R&B along with trap, and it's something that I find it to be really interesting. But they released a pair of singles. One's called Thrive and one's called Ain't the Same. Ain't the Same is kind of the more R&B side of things, mm-hmm. and Thrive is the more trap, kind of like You Write, the album ender from their last mm-hmm. project. And both are really good. I found Thrive to be maybe a little bit too much like You Right. I was kind of hoping for a little bit more of an evolution, but Ain't the Same. It also has this really soul-y feel that really gives me a little bit of optimism that whatever next project they have coming out, that it'll be a bit of an evolution from their sound. Because obviously, in this realm of trap, things can get a bit repetitive.
Yeah, I mean, that's always my biggest gripe with it. It's like, okay, try a little different. Have a little variation in your life. You know, stop eating vanilla, maybe have some mint chocolate chip or some shit. You don't even have to go that wild. You don't have to go, like, straight, no ice cream, eating sorbet. You just go, eh, let's go mint chip. Try a little
drizzle something different. Drizzle some chocolate milk on that, you know, maybe go to Cold Stone.
No, just a little too... Cold Stone's a little too uppity for people out there.
It's just a little too bourgeois. Maybe we should go with some Baskin-Robbins.
Yeah, there we go. 31 flavors. Allegedly.
No. We gotta go with Ben & Jerry's. That's the people's ice cream.
Dude, Ben & Jerry's are straight the people's ice cream. They're like vegan ice cream, and they're amazing. If you ever have to get ice cream, do that. Granted, I can't remember last time I had it because, you know, lactose.
They're also from Vermont, you know.
Yeah, no, they're socialist, like, straight up.
They're friends with Sanders, hashtag no politics. But any thoughts that you have about the They singles from you listening to them?
It kind of sounded like The Weeknd. Like, a little bit.
I can see that.
Like, I was listening to it and I go, this, if I wasn't paying attention, I'd be like, was this The Weeknd? I mean, that's literally the only comment I have on it. So it's not bad, but it's not that great. I mean, it's literally what I said on The Weeknd, what, last week or 2 weeks ago? My same opinions on that, so there you go.
Yeah. I think I talked about them in a music recommendations episode, and I talked about their album New Religion, and it sounds, like, not too different from that. And so, if you listen to that and you've heard that, if you like that, then you might be into that.
There you go.
Now, you know, I've been saying that a lot. Moving on, The Horrors is another band that... I really want to start doing this more with future episodes, where we just pick a random artist where, like, we don't know about them that much, and we listen to whatever came out that week because we're short on albums that week, and we try it, and it ends up being cool or not cool, but we just... A wild card is what I'm saying. Because that was a hell of a wild card that we picked last year.
Yeah, I mean, their album last year won our album of the year. It was damn good.
The only album of the year award that matters, Audio Face Awards.
Oh, the only thing that matters. Anyways, so they released a single of two songs, which is Firescape and Water Drop. And it's very similar to their previous album, the first song, with kind of this echoing thing that sounds like a water drop, no pun intended. Because the next song is called Water Drop. But with that effect, so really similar to what they did with their last album. Nothing too special, but it's good. The second song is a instrumental, similar experimental electronic alternative rock. If that makes any sense. So I liked it. It's pretty good. Also, yeah, the album cover looks, I mean, it's the same thing as theirs, just a little different writing on it, on the side. So, yeah, they're still releasing good shit. Yeah, I was kind of worried when they released them, like, I wonder if it's going to be completely different or if they'll keep it the same. And they could have put both of these in their album and it would fit perfectly.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but this is actually on the special... These two songs were on the special edition release of the album 5 or V, however you want to put it, in Japan. These are just kind of being more widely released now. And so, for all intents and purposes, these are extra songs on the album. So it makes sense that it
like
should
OK
fit
Computer,
in with the aesthetic
of it's fight. Like OK Computer B-sides that they officially released in 2017, but they've kind of been out for a while. I see. So yeah it fits that. Yeah, like that. Exactly. So it fits that theme. Or like the Deluxe version 1975, you know, pick your poison. Okay, yeah, that makes more sense then. Yeah, if you liked their album, which you should, because it's freaking good. And if you don't, then you need to rethink your brain. Maybe put a screwdriver
in it. This is definitely not the podcast for you. If you at least don't listen to that album and respect it for
It. Like, you might not like it, because I understand everybody's music taste is different, but you have to respect it for... that genre, what it does. I mean, hell, I even do that in trap. So, you know, if Sean can be open-minded about it, you can too.
Which might be an interesting conversation, because probably the biggest album release of the week, possibly the month, honestly. I mean,
definitely the month. Definitely.
Who knows? Who knows? I don't know about the rest of the album schedule, but you're probably right. Let's be real. Cardi B, her first real album, Invasion of Privacy, dropped this past Friday. It happened. Cardi B, ever since she kind of came out of the scene, has just been kind of blowing up. One of her singles just hits Billboard top 10, just breaking records left and right. And this is her first album. It's nice considering it's from the trap sort of genre, so to speak, but this album is short. It's 13 songs, 48 minutes long. And how about I go first with this interview, or this review, and then we go to you, because we'll do something interesting with this. Okay, so yeah, 13 songs, 48 minutes. It goes through, I'd say I felt the album had two halves to it, and it's almost split about in half.
All right.
The first half has a lot of, I think, is the better half of the album. It shows a lot of Cardi B's range, not only as kind of more trap-produced beats, but just as a lyricist, as an artist, which I think she is great on her own. Not even just typecasting as, oh, she's great for a female rapper. No, she's just a great rapper. She's just a great lyricist. And that shows out in most of the first half of the album, and even parts of the second half too, but like mainly the first half. Even surprisingly for especially like a mainstream artist and one like Cardi B, there aren't that many features on here. I think there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 songs that have features on them. One's obligatory because of Migos. one's 21 Savage. That had come out already. There's one with Chance the Rapper, which I've talked to a lot of people, and we kind of agree that it's kind of like the highlight of the album.
I'm going to laugh about that song later on, but you keep going.
Best Life? Yeah, because I played a separate offline game with Sean, but we'll explain this later. Really, I felt that the weakest parts of the album, not only for some things that we'll address with Sean later, but I thought the weakest parts of the album were the singles that already came out. Like I Do, the album ender featuring SZA is just kind of amazing and a pretty surprising way to end an album. I honestly didn't think an album kind of this mainstream would end in this kind of way. And as an album, I think it does kind of fall apart in continuity after the Kehlani song Ring, whatever continuity it sort of resembles. But let's see. Usually, this is a trap album. This is a mainstream album. This is something that Sean would usually not like. And so, with that, how did you take this album?
So, the first song didn't feel that trappy, to be honest.
Get Up 10.
Yeah, Get Up 10. It was, So, in general, I actually liked the album overall, because the whole feel of it wasn't how most of the trap albums lately have been coming out, how they almost every song on it has the same beat, is the same time signature, same everything on it. This one at least does something different. Like the first song, Get Up 10, she's going hard. She's going off on people. And I literally like that about the album, where she's just mouthing off, telling people off about like in her past life, who told her that she would never make it, how she had a pretty rough life before everything. And I really do, I respect that from her big time. And that was the opening song on it. I agree with you on the weak songs, because my least favorite song on here by far was Body or Cardi, which is featuring 21. Hated that song, honestly. It just sounded like normal trap and was really, really weak compared to the rest of the album. Best Life literally made me laugh my ass off, because it sounded like fucking Usher doing some shit in 2008. Like skirt. Like, okay. I know skirt's been played on everything ever since it was made from a Gucci ad lib. Now it's taking a whole new dimension. And I'm like, oh my god. They like somehow people reinvent skirt, and I literally laughed my ass off. It actually wasn't that bad of a song. It was pretty catchy. Overall, not bad, actually. I did thoroughly enjoy it, which kind of surprised me. Except, she bad.
She bad.
Okay.
Da-air.
Learn how to breathe air. I have 3-year-olds that I teach to swim who have better breath control than you. Oh my God. How to breathe. They can talk. You go, shh, hey. I haven't heard that much hyperventilating on a mic. I can't say that because this is a family-friendly podcast, allegedly.
This is so not a family-friendly podcast. Every single episode has been explicit content because of something one of us has said immediately in the podcast. We're supposed to have gotten it out.
It sounds like he's having phone sex with the goddamn microphone. Like, come on, dog.
Shout out to YG.
YG, calm yourself. Come on, dog. Other than that,
I'm excited on the phone sex line.
Seriously, I'm like, are you getting paid to like? What are you trying to do? Anyways,
like, damn. Don't please stop calling the phone sex line. Collect.
Right.
It's not even mumble rap. It's just like breathy rap.
It's a whole new genre. Even the drip, the second song featuring Migos, wasn't half bad.
Really, I thought that song was like.
I mean, it was flat.
Okay, but weak.
It was okay. Very it was weak. Flat, but I didn't hate it.
I'm surprised.
So, yeah, it was an overall album. I didn't mind. Which I'm pretty surprised. Granted, I don't like a lot of the content in the album generally, like the messages and stuff, but a lot of them I did at the same time. I was like, 65-35, Bernie would have won, # no politics.
Fuck. I love the songs Shout Out to Bickenhead. I thought that was...
Yeah, I think that song went hard.
Some of my favorite songs, I think, are the most polarizing songs on the album.
Yep.
I like Bickenhead and Be Careful, I think, are really good. I think those two songs kind of show way more about Cardi B than I think even Bodak Yellow does. I think Bodak Yellow even isn't even a strong part of the album, even though that's like the lead single and that's like that's the song people know Cardi B from now. That's not even the highlight of the album.
No, I think God, no.
The singles from this album sell the album short.
Oh, that's... Going into it, that's what I thought the album was going to be, and that's what it really surprised me. So, let's get to our scores. What is our theme for today? Granted, we're only reviewing 2 albums, but what should our scale be based upon?
I've come up with them a lot recently. Do you want to take a swing at it?
From Tiger's back surgeries, Tiger Woods back surgeries. 1 to 5.
How's that scale?
All right, from 1, his first surgery being rough because then he couldn't play golf for like years and sucks, to his latest one where he's actually playing golf, still kind of sucking, but at least he's back on tour. So that's 1 to 4.
Which is the best we can hope for music sometimes.
Right. So 1 being bad, 4 being good.
All right. I would have to give this, because this is Sean, and you know
it's you could give half surgeries. That's like a cortisone shot in the lower back.
Yeah, I'm gonna give him a half surgery. Can I give Tiger like a 3 and 1 like get pulled over for Percocets like?
Three point one mugshots.
Yeah, like because here's what I want to say about this album, all in all, right? To bring it into Tiger Woods, this is the only podcast in which we're bringing Cardi B and Tiger Woods together, and No one's nine iron's getting broken.
Right. Someone's not taking a driver to the face.
Right, but Geico, 15 minutes can save you 15% or more on car insurance. On windshield insurance. Okay. Oh my god. This album, especially for a first, like, this is a fitting first album. I think Cardi B can go nowhere from up. I think she surprised with a lot of the tracks on here. I think what's holding her back is just what holds aspects of the genre back. The repetitiveness, the kind of not really going further out of the same kind of tropes that you see in trap. But like the difference is that Cardi B does that, and she does that enough throughout her album that you can see she's more than that, and that's kind of amazing. But you know, that's why I'm like, it's like Tiger. He showed up, he kind of participated in the whole like are you drunk test, but just failed miserably.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like he just played the Masters tournament right now, and he shot one over for the tournament, which is okay. He made the cut, but nowhere near contention. Makes sense.
But yeah, so three and a half for me. How about you?
Yeah, I was gonna give a solid three. For me, it's the same thing where you can only do so much with trap, but I could tell she was trying a little different. Like the first song on it really felt a little different compared to most trap stuff. And yeah, I was generally surprised by it. But there's still, like, the singles and everything, there are still songs that sound like normal trap where anybody can make that at this point because it's so overdone. Yeah, overall, solid.
Sweet.
Yeah. Whoa. What is
this? Yeah, that's a link from last week. Pay no attention to that. Yeah.
I would say we should be talking disregard. About Young Live, Live Nation.
Yeah, we're gonna.
To upset the established order and take over ticketing systems.
So before you load that, I'm gonna add an extra thing that's kind of like late breaking news. Cardi B performed on SNL and made it like kind of clear that she's pregnant. So that whole saga is over. Because that was a whole isn't she thing that was kind of going on.
So
for a
she
bit.
Like officially is unofficially officially.
Yeah. So, for the people who are caring, that's fucking wild. She's pregnant, is like charting on everything, is touring at Coachella, and is apparently gonna have a baby, and is all right.
All right.
Let's go to So Live Nation is a company that I'm sure people who are into music kind of know about. They do a lot of things involving ticketing. They do a lot of things involving venue management. They do a lot of things around artist management. There's a lot of different ways they make money. Ticketmaster, we know for similar reasons, like ticketing services, venue management, etc. And so the New York Times came out with this big story earlier in this week, you know, some of that fresh fake news. And it's all about apparently Live Nation using kind of really threatening measures to get as much money out of artists as they can. And kind of exploiting their monopoly power since they've kind of merged with Ticketmaster to, yeah, you know, do what capitalists do. Make that paper. Raise some funds.
Yeah, I mean, it's the whole ticketing thing in general because it's really bad with sports as well. Or any event that you try to freaking go to, everything is marked up way over price. And there's been a few musical artists that have been trying to take care of it. I remember like Radiohead, when we try to get tickets, Radiohead, like, it's out of our control. We're trying our best to get it to the people, but this shit is so monopolized that we can't do anything about it.
The issue being tickets, like, selling out very quickly and...
Yeah, price is going up the asshole.
Selling out very quickly because of bots that people were using to exploit the ticketing systems to buy the tickets and then resell them for 3 times the price. I mean, like... Yeah, Sean and I paid 250% of the regular price of the tickets, which were already like triple digit tickets. And we got lucky because it got way worse.
It got way worse. Holy hell.
Like people paid Like, we paid 250%. There are people who paid double what we paid for the same ticket, same general admission ticket.
Yeah, see, if there's no way we could have gone if we waited any longer, there's no way I'm paying that kind of money.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, concert was basically worth it, but still, it's not what artists want. Artists want to make money, and there are very few ways for artists to make money, and we talk about that a lot in Audio Face, and the next story is going to be about Spotify IPO, and it's going to be another story about how artists are not making money. But, like, this is a really big issue where this company that's supposed to be kind of working on behalf of artists and supposed to be making these, like, fan experiences better is kind of doing the direct opposite. And so, kind of going into details, there's one chart the article shows really well, and it shows, like, out of the top 100 ticket venues, I don't have an exact number, but it's safe to say over 85% of them are managed by Ticketmaster, including 9 of the top 10 arenas, or, like, arenas in the country based on ticket sales. So you've got, like, Madison Square Garden and Barclays Center in New York area, Forum, Prudential Center in Newark, Verizon Center in DC, all these different places. And so they have this big monopoly power to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
But then what they'll do is they'll go, right. So in one example, Ticketmaster threw on a like $15 fee on top of a $36 ticket for an amphitheater that Live Nation owned. And it was like an egregious moment in that case because the tickets were really like cheap in that case. But there are other instances where artists were just like basically priced out of venues because they were not behaving properly. Okay, here's the part that's exactly specific. There's a case in Atlanta where in 2013, the band Matchbox 20, Live Nation bypassed the Gwinnett Center, which was a popular venue outside the city, for another venue in town. And Live Nation kind of didn't care about that at all. And basically, they kind of fucked over that band in that case, from what I'm understanding. I kind of bungled that, but
what are your thoughts, Sean? I mean, it's just the whole, it's so fucked up. I don't even know where to begin because it's been an issue that, I mean, we've been talking since the dawn of the podcast, but I mean, obviously it's been going on way before us. But at least now it seems that people are getting on board with it, and there seems to be some type of legal action that's going to be taking place, hopefully. This is the Department of Justice is investigating possible antitrust violations by Live Nation.
Possible.
So, right. So this was kind of going into what we were talking to. I didn't realize. Damn, Jesus Christ! I didn't realize they manage that many people. Yeah, it's bad.
YouTube, Beyonce, Bruno Mars, Madonna.
Just it keeps going on. Please pay fucking people, right? So speaking of paying people, right? Spotify
is not.
I mean, they never have been. But they set a record day in their stock market debut. Always, you know, trusty Wall Street. You can always trust Wall Street, right? Always
makes good deals.
Always makes the good deals, allegedly. they debuted on the New York Stock Exchange. Opening shares as high as $165.95 US on April 3rd. Jesus Christ.
We're in a bubble.
The streaming service made the largest ever direct listing, valuing the company close to $30 billion. That's ridiculous. That's a lot of goddamn money for that.
Yeah, there's two interesting things here. A, tech stocks are really, really valuable now.
Super valuable. I remember, like, people buy Amazon left and right.
Yeah, I remember Facebook being like opening up at like what, around $30 or something like that. And now these are arguably less valuable companies. I mean, I personally like Spotify more than Facebook for reasons that are very well documented on the internet. YouTube.com/Dan from the internet. But there's this amazing thing happening with tech stocks and evaluation of them. So I guess it's good for that. But it eventually went down to the second point. The other interesting thing about this is that usually tech companies do IPOs in order to raise capital, but Spotify didn't do that. They went directly to market. So they're not kind of raising capital that way. They're raising capital with an initial offering, which is interesting and kind of a quick way to do it, but it broke records.
I mean, if anything, they might be able to make more money and hopeful. I mean, I doubt it. I mean, this is literally trickle-down economics. But maybe, just maybe, off chance, the 0.2% chance that they won't be greedy, they can start paying people right.
Yeah. I highly doubt it
because in history, it just doesn't happen. But, I mean, that's the only good thing I could see. If not, then cool. Another bubble that can pop very quickly.
I want to figure out when Spotify is going to get their cryptocurrency going. That's what I'll jump in.
Also, side note, Finn Staples, please don't collab with Little Yachty. Yours truly, me.
There was a post on Instagram where apparently Vince Staples had done something with Lil Yachty.
Please don't.
Like, seriously.
Right, honestly. You're gonna get minus Vince. You're gonna get minus Vince credits. Alright.
You're gonna lose some serious Long Beach cred for collaborating with Lil Yachty.
Like, unless somehow it's really good, which I doubt because it's Lil Yachty.
I don't think even MF Doom producing could make
MF Doom producing album of Vince Staples with Lil Yachty couldn't be any good. Just because
we've been spinning some fire on this podcast, but I found some late breaking sauce
that
I'm throwing in here. But Sobbed by RBE, a band that we didn't really know how to pronounce and still don't. Apparently throwing some shade, and this is. We're doing this again. Looks like we're doing this again.
So, rap beef.
Rap beef time.
We back.
It's a regional rap beef. We're about to cover this live on AudioFace before the bodies are cold. So Young T.O. from the group Sobbed by RBE, whatever the fuck, was like, you can tell the Migos we the hottest group in the game. Fuck the Migos.
Oh god, it's back, baby. We back. Somebody's gonna get shot.
Someone's gonna get shot. We're calling it today.
This is beautiful. Oh, this
put
is
it in stone. Sunday, the 8th of April. AudioFaces called it. Rap beefs are back.
Someone's getting a drive by on the freaking 90 freeway, guys. It's gonna happen.
Oh my god. We now return to Thugnificent, Rags to Bitches.
When does Bitches to Rags happen? That's what I'm waiting for.
Okay, so this is a fun fact. It stands for Strictly Only Brothers by, sort of, Times, whatever, Real Boy Entertainment, which makes even less sense than Migos. I should probably be representing for them because, like, they're from the Bay Area, but I'm an impartial journalist, I like to say.
What the fuck? That's all I gotta say. Alright, well, anyways. So we go into our second and last album review of today's AudioFace podcast. Best podcast in the world. Subscribe to us.
2 weeks AudioFace, so fucking enjoy it. Take it all in.
Alright.
Play it slowly if you need to.
Or go back and listen to other ones that you have missed, like the AudioFace Awards, or ones where we have good discussions on classical music, or Rock is Dead, or ones where we feature special guests. Go listen. Now, because we're cool. Anyways.
After this podcast.
After this
continue.
One.
Continue.
So, Deadmau5, Deadmau5, Joel Zimmerman, he released Where's the Drop? ? Album on fucking Tidal. He gets dropped down to Vince points. As much as I love Deadmau5, I hate Tidal with the burning passion.
Okay, but hold. Shouldn't we fucking hypocrites? We should be all behind a streaming service that pays artists more, that respects artists more. Shouldn't we be behind that?
Do they pay more?
Apparently per stream.
If they do, then title's cool.
Yeah,
I thought they did. I didn't think they did, because they're the same monthly fee as Spotify. It's still $9.99.
I think they pay more royalties per stream.
I'm gonna have to honestly look into that. Yeah, and if they do, then cool. Then hashtag non-fuck title.
I mean, I think there's still, you can make an argument about, well, consumer usability. Title is, well, not really. I mean, title is just as accessible as anything else, more or less.
But I mean, they have all the same music. Just about.
From what I found, yeah. This was also like my first experience in having title, because I got the trial just for this.
Yeah.
And I was able to kind of see, and they had even some of the EDM tracks I'd expect from Spotify. So it's a decent track list, but let's talk about Where's the Drop.
It's an orchestral album of some of Deadmau5's, I like calling him that just because it's fun. Some of Deadmau5's best records. So it is, how many songs? 15 songs long, 1 hour and 7 minutes, which, you know, isn't that bad because some of his songs could be like 16 minutes long. I thoroughly enjoyed this as a lover of classical music in general. And it was really cool to hear renditions of electronic music done in an orchestra. So some of the beats and stuff I know, like Strobe, which is one of my all-time favorite Deadmau5 songs, put into an orchestra. And I go, this is really, really cool.
Mine too.
And you could really hear the track in itself, if that makes any sense. Like, you can hear, okay, this is Strobe. Like, this is NVIDIA. This is the song, just in orchestra form. So I like that, because it's crossing genres. It's really cool, and I love how he called it Where's the Drop, like, calling out all the fake-ass electronic music fans. They're like, oh, drop, all hyped up on fucking drugs. They don't know what the hell actual music is, which is most people at electronic music festivals. I will shit on you for days, because I'm mad. I have forever be mad and salty.
That being said, we're friends.
Yeah, but you actually listen to good music. You're one of the 1%, the 1% of people that actually knows what they're doing when they go to those festivals and not just there to do stupid shit. So, anyways, enough of my tangent. Yeah, overall, that was really cool. I liked it. It's been in the works for a while, and he's kind of teased things here or there of him trying to learn how to fucking play a piano. Of course, he has a goddamn $120,000 Steinway piano in his goddamn house. I'm jealous. So like, you see him doing the sheet music for some of his tracks. Like, holy shit, he's actually going to do this. And yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Strobe by far is my favorite other album, because like, it's one of my favorite Deadmau5 songs in general, but I love this rendition of it. Absolutely loved it. It's the last song on the album. If you want to skip to that, just to hear it. Other than that, it's just literally his songs done in orchestra. Pretty good. What'd you take?
Yeah, I found it really, like, beautiful, because I think you described it as renditions. I think you used even a different word. I describe it more like they... Usually in a dance or an electronic song, you have a loop or a beat.
Right.
And that's kind of the bones of the song. That's the skeleton of the song. This kind of takes the skeleton of the song and extrapolates it into a composition is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And it really kind of takes that skeleton and turns it the same way you would make like a coda, if you would, in classical music, and kind of makes that go throughout the song. And I think that is really amazing. That's done specifically well in, now let's talk about one of my favorite Deadmau5 songs, Acedia. Even if that's not the proper way you pronounce it, I've always pronounced it that way, so I'll take that to the grave.
Acedia.
Yeah, okay, pretty good. All right. Yeah, Acedia. I love that song, and I think the way it was done here, that and Effin' Pig as well. That's where you could really get it, where you take whatever is the little characteristic moment of that song originally, and you make it this classical piece. And then on title, you can also see like the live performance video of it, and it's just shot on these, you know, really nice cameras, professionally done. And you can see the whole orchestra kind of doing the whole piece together. And it's whole coming together as classical music, but you can, it becomes really accessible because it is based in electronic dance music that people can already kind of know, especially if they know DeadMau5. And so, like, yeah, this is a, definitely a treat for Sean as someone who's classical, one of the biggest classical music evangelists possibly in the world, especially the probably most heard classical music evangelist based on podcast downloads, I'd imagine. I just made a metric up for you, and you can put that in your bio.
I'm down.
Most listened to podcast classical music enthusiast on the planet.
Yeah, I'll put that on my bio along with Triathlete. I'll do that.
Slash. But yeah, if you're looking for this album and you're looking for a drop, you're not going to find one, but it is.
That's the point.
Yeah, that's the point. It is a classical art piece and it stands on its own in its unique way. And it's not going to be for everyone, but if you take the opportunity to listen to it, this for some people might be the only classical music album they listen to all year. I think that's a unique thing. That's really cool because you don't really get to expose that genre to the mainstream that often.
Yeah. I definitely love that, where it's cool to really hear a blend. Yeah, very, very rare that that happens, especially in electronic music. So overall, on Tiger Back Surgeries, what we've given this, what you given this?
I'm going to give this a 3.75. Out of principle, I'm not giving it a 4, because it's, like, not perfect.
Damn.
But
Jesus. Whew. That's almost Tiger coming back trying to win tournament, Tiger. Damn, dog. That's a pretty healthy back. That's a good back.
It's good back. It's lean back. I mean, he's got it a little bit worn out from whatever Norwegian princess he's into this week, but, like, it's still a really, it's a mean back. It's, I tell you, it's a baby got back, if you will. No.
Wow. Shit. I was going to give it a 3.5, and I thought that was high. Damn, 3.75. That's fucking high. That's one of the highest rated albums we've ever done.
I mean,
yeah, I don't disagree with you. I was giving it a 3.5. That's just what I thought it deserved. So, go listen to it. It's a really cool blend, especially if you're a big DeadMau5 fan. You'll hear the songs, but in a completely different mix.
Yeah. If you're a DeadMau5 fan, if you're a music fan, if you're like,
if you're a just human, anything, on
this
Earth.
Is just an experience. This is the thing to get a Tidal trial membership for.
Yeah, exactly. And we both got a Tidal trial just for this. So going on to shitty music
for the people, and eventually for the tax write-off.
Right. And so now going to shitty musical acts. Post Malone announces Beer Bongs and Bellies, which
Bellies. Beer Bongs and Bentleys is
wow,
his album.
I got dyslexic as fuck. Beer Bongs and Bentleys, which comes out April 27th. Whatever, dude. You have a That's fucking barbed wire tattooed on your forehead. You're an idiot.
We are going to be reviewing that album as unbiased as we possibly can.
Always.
He's a shit face, and I can't say anything but that.
But hey, remember, if you're a shit face but you make good music, we'll tell you that you make good music. You're still
I don't
shit
think
face.
Though. Something tells me that won't be Post Malone's problem.
Nope. Oh God, I forgot about this. Oh.
Death Grips.
Oh.
It's okay, Sean. This isn't as crazy as last time the Death Grips released an album cover. When they released Year of the Snitch, when they released No Love Deep Web in 2013, that was a little wild. Mm-hmm. Year of the Snitch is less wild. It should be coming out fairly soon, based on what I'm reading, so we'll be checking out for that. This is kind of the whole upcoming albums corner of the podcast, and then the Arctic Monkeys have also announced an album. Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino. Hopefully it's not like Everything Now. Like one of those concept things.
Please, God, no. Don't do that.
It spans 11 tracks and will be released on May 11th.
May 11th, all right.
So we should be hearing a single from that, like, any
pretty
day
pretty soon,
really.
Then, yeah. Now, going back to good music, which I was... Well, yeah.
Wait.
Why the hell did my computer... That was weird. It, like, double did something. Never mind. We already talked about that. That was weird.
Yeah, well, we're not... I'm not sure we're talking about good music. Although, Wynn Butler might disagree.
Why is he playing a fucking 12 string is my question. He's still not woke. It's Wynn Butler is still not woke. By the way, I've been spelling his name wrong. I just realized that for about 10 years.
Have you been spelling it?
Y-W-N-N.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, if your name is Wynn, Y-W-I-N.
Like Wynn Casinos?
Yeah, exactly, because if your name is Wynn, like... we need to win this race, you might need to go home and rethink your life. Which I think he needs to with this whole everything now bullshit anyways.
There are certain people with a certain level of pigment in their skin where they just have certain kinds of names. I'm going to stop myself there because that could be problematic if I twist it in a different way, so I'm just going to stop. it's very rare that I find my own line for myself, but yeah, here we are. Anyways, Wynn Butler... kind of had some responses and counter takes, if you will, on the whole Everything Now dumpster fire. Okay album, but the marketing campaign, we got our shots in it. Apparently it was really bad. People didn't like it. People thought it was like overbearing and too hipstery.
Yep.
When Butler quit Twitter, which basically cemented him for the Audio Face episode 30 Noted Little Bitch Award. We've been talking a lot about that award show. You should definitely check it out if you haven't already and you're a new listener. That would be great if you listen to.
Wynn Butler Little Bitch Award.
But basically the reason we're talking about him now is that... Oh, I forgot about the other quotes too.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
He said that... Oh man, this is pretty bad. Let's start with the beginning. He says, according to him, people simply didn't get what the Arcade Fire album was supposed to do to be like a satirical promotional campaign.
Dumbass.
Like, of course it was doing that, I even talked about it, it was doing that whole, let's be conscious about the fact that we're kind of being watched and tracked by everything thing that was kind of being played out, but was still even kind of poignant in 2016, but they just kind of went off the rails with it, with the Everything Now fidget spinners and the all that shit. Yeah. Jesus. Butler suggested that he didn't agree with Republican politics, but wasn't all for modern liberalism either. Hashtag both sides. Speaking specifically about the political movements of the last few years, he said, quote, I think the American left are crazy too. I'm an independent. I've never been registered Democrat. I voted for Obama. I've only voted for Democrats. But I have no horse in the race. No one I have any affiliation to. My heroes are Martin Luther King and Gandhi. I'm way more on the side of MLK than I am Occupy Wall Street in terms of my personal philosophy. The thing about civil rights movement was it was about something very specific, and I would... find the left is just devouring itself. Concerning itself with things that are not particularly healthy, just focusing on accomplishing actual things, just surface things. End quote.
Alright.
While he supports activism like the March of Our Lives movement, he admits that he grew up around guns and isn't convinced that the American people are ready for change.
Well, alright. He's just... Because I don't want to get political on this podcast, but all I'm going to say is he's dumb. Really stupid. That's like, stupid. I don't want to get into it. This is a music podcast, but he is minus 16 Vince credits, is what he's at.
Let's just say there's a type of... Let's, as we occasionally do on Audio Face, crash into the center divider that is politics for just a moment. Centrism is really dumb. At this point, if you're a both sides are even person, I get if you don't like a particular political party, but
I mean, how I don't like any particular party, but
I hate both of them.
I hate both of them, really, and I'm as left as it gets.
Honestly, but it's. If you can't very easily make a stance about where you are, like, Killer Mike is really, like, he makes dumb takes. Like, Killer Mike is so bad at takes. I found myself cheering on Joy Reid. Like, Joy Reid actually dunked on Killer Mike, that neoliberal shill, for a moment, okay?
Yeah, that's pretty rough.
Killer Mike annoys me sometimes. That being said, he knows what his convictions are, and he, like, stands
his ground.
He takes a
pose.
He talks about it,
he,
right? And
he knows his ideas. Stand. Yeah,
he
has his positions, and he stays with them.
Seriously, when Butler's trying to talk about people misunderstanding him and not understanding, like, the political statement he was trying to make, and then comes back with making a milquetoast political statement, it's, like, seriously, if you're gonna be that big of an artist, you gotta go balls to the wall. Nothing's gonna be Kanye West, Bush doesn't care about black people, straight on air, deadpan. just go in.
I forgot about that. Mike Myers was like, huh?
Woo.
His face was like, so much. But Bush doesn't care about black people.
You're not allowed to be that real on TV, man.
Come on, man. It's too much sauce.
It's really bad. But yeah, Wynn Butler is still a little bitch.
Yeah. So, anyways, guys, thanks for listening to episode, 44? Yep, episode 44.
Yes.
Face audio face. You can find us all over the internet at SW Suarez. That's my personal one. Or follow us at Audio Face Pod on everything now. No, not really. Fuck that thing. Subscribe. Please, if you're listening to this for the first time, and leave a review or whatever, as you do. And if you ever want to recommend us music that you like or want us to listen to, think we'd find interesting, think we'd find to hate, or make me want to go home and rethink my life, please at us on Twitter or Instagram, and we will talk to you on there as well. Yeah, I'm open-minded, and we will listen to anything, pretty much.
Yes. Administrative things. We'll be taking a break next week as we do a little bit of recuperating from our busy lives. Tech stuff. We'll be back the week afterwards, so within 2 weeks, with any major music news. We'll catch up from that week, the week before, all that stuff. We'll have you back caught up, no worries.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be chill. Audio Face 50 is coming up. We're very aware of that. We have some special things that'll be, like, changing the game totally.
It'll coincide roughly. 6 weeks, will we be together in 6 weeks? Yeah, 6 episodes. We will definitely be seeing each other. Pause.
Yeah, that'll... we'll get to that. Very fun things will be announced. That'll be almost a year of the podcast, too. It'll almost coincide, so... very fun things will be in the gambit. We'll talk about those off mic, but...
And then we'll let the people know, because it's a podcast for the people.
Yeah, follow me on Instagram at Dan from the Internet. Most things at Dan from the Internet. Twitter's the only weird one. It's at Dan from the Web. And thank you for listening. Every subscription, all that stuff really helps in getting the visibility of the podcast out there. So we really appreciate it. Thank you, and have a good 2 weeks.
Cheers, guys.